This podcast is brought to you by our partners at the International Sous Vide Association. I'm excited to be the keynote speaker at the virtual event of the season, the ISVA Sous Vide Summit, this coming August 21st through the 23rd. Hear from the world's top sous vide experts, build new connections, and discover ways to perfect your sous vide cooking skills at this interactive event. The best part is you get to attend from the comfort of your own home. Thank you again, our friends at ISVA, and visit their website at www.isva.org to register today. Hey, everybody, welcome back for another week of our podcast. And this week we have a very special guest. I would consider him to be one of my mentors over the years during my time doing Bocuse d'Or, and that is Chef Daniel Ballou. I will tell you, I've met many amazing chefs over my career. And Daniel, I will tell you, is probably one of the most gracious, happy, always a big smile on his face. His enthusiasm is contagious. He just lights up a party, and also just incredibly talented. I had the opportunity to spend time with him during my training for Bocuse d'Or. And really, I'll tell you, I mean, it was just such an inspiring time in my career. And I really feel grateful that I've been able to have a relationship with him over the years. And he's always been super approachable. Anytime we've wanted to reach out to participate in things like this, he's always, as busy as he is, especially in these times, he still made time to do so. So we wanted to talk with him about how the whole pandemic has impacted the last couple of months. And what does he see for the future for his restaurants and for the industry in general? I think that this is going to be really insightful, give us a unique perspective to one of the country's most talented chefs, world's most talented chefs, Mr. Daniel Ballou. Let's dig in. You obviously have been an iconic American chef. I mean, you have your restaurateur, you have restaurants around the world. Where my first experience with you, I mean, obviously as a young culinarian, I mean, I was always inspired by you just from reading books and everything that I saw early on in my career. And then to be able to have the first time really able to meet you and spend time with you was during the Bocuse d'Or years.
Yes, of course.
And I was always, I think I was amazed that you were such a approachable and humble person. And I was kind of, I don't know, it was something kind of stuck with me that somebody this successful was really a very down to earth, gracious, and your enthusiasm has always been contagious over the years. But we're just so honored to be able to kind of have you on the show today. So thank you for joining us.
I'm just still a lucky little farm boy who came to New York City.
Well, I can tell you too. I know from going over and visiting your family's house over in France. I mean, you could tell that was those traits were really kind of in your DNA. It was in your family. I mean, you could just see the hospitality with your family as well. So, Danielle, wanted to ask you about like the last couple of months. I mean, what has it been like for you as trying to navigate through this with your company?
Yes, first, I would like to congratulate everyone in your team and yourself, Richard, for what you have been doing also in the food sphere, but also communicating a lot about our industry and the communities and, you know, what chefs are going through. So I'm very happy and proud to be part of your podcast here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chef. Appreciate that.
And the last 4 months, almost 5 months, since March 13, I've been a bit of not a roller coaster. Yeah, well, maybe a roller coaster, but mostly going down. And that was the scary part. It's like, where are we going? Where are we going? And I think we are touching definitely the low part and riding up again. So, of course, during that time, right away, it was to close our restaurant in New York, in D.C., and then within a week time, Toronto, Montreal, Singapore, London was closing. We're going to have time. And of course, everything stopped. And so from about 780 people working with me in New York City, plus Palm Beach and DC, which are our restaurants, we were down to 7 people. Wow. And everybody else had to be furloughed. And that was really a free fall, I would say, in something you can never imagine. I mean, you know, you close a restaurant, you feel very upset. You lose staff, you lose people you care for, but you close, you know, 10 more than we closed 12 restaurants and other businesses such as retail store, epicerie, catering, and all that. So that was beyond a free fall. But right away, we kind of, you know, we made sure that we took care of our staff and also built a foundation right away, hand in hand by Daniel Boulud, who was to raise money to make sure that we could assist them on top of maybe, you know, their unemployment rate. And that really worked out well, and we keep continuing to support them and you know, cover also their insurance, health insurance and all that. I think it's very important. And little by little, we have been bringing back people. So Palm Beach, we could manage to continue to do right away takeout and curbside pickup. And in New York, as maybe a couple of weeks after we closed, I have a new partner in New York City, Mark Holliday. And Mark Holliday is the CEO of SL Green. And they have basically buildings all over town. And is my new partner at One Vanderbilt there. We are opening early next year in early 21. And he said, you know, I would really like to put back all my tenants in business. And I want them to make meals, and I will donate those meals to the city of New York. And he said, but Daniel, can we start that together? And I said, of course. I was looking for an opportunity to be able to do meals and support World Central Kitchen and support City Meal on Wheels. And so to date, we have gifted more than 200,000 meals. Wow. And I made about, I would say, more than a quarter of that myself in the production kitchen downtown with a small crew, but at least it gave me a chance to bring back people and start to do that. So we do that right now with City Meal on Wheels every day. And then Danielle, I also started the to-go business. I wanted to make sure that starting into those initiatives in New York City, we felt safe enough to do it because, you know, a lot of friends in LA, in Chicago, in even Minneapolis, they were doing the takeout and curbside, but I don't think they were as vulnerable as New York, and they weren't going through so much challenges as New York in terms of safety. And we had to learn also about how can we continue to be active and be safe. And I think we have been cautious enough. And so we started Daniel Boulud Kitchen. And there is a bistro menu. There is a seasonal menu. We have special package for weekend where we can provide the 3 meal, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday brunch, and with like dishes like bouillabaisse and something like soulful or fun. And so it has been good in a sense that we keep bringing back people more and more. Since then, we reopened Bar Boulud. That has been about a week ago. Since they gave us the authorization outdoor to be able to sit down people in New York, and so that is good as well. But it is 10% of what our business used to be, maybe right now, and it's growing. We're opening the retail store this week, which is Epicerie Boulud, and so little by little we're learning to walk again.
Did you? I mean, as somebody that has international perspective, I mean, because you have locations around the world, would you say that, like, in the United States is when things really kind of hit here, that kind of impacted, or did you see this coming with other locations around the world, or was when it got to the United States is like when it kind of hit more of the tipping point where you said, hey, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to act.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some concern in Singapore, but Singapore took big initiative at checking. There was only one entrance to the entire casino there, the Marina Bay Sands. People were checked right away. So they took step of caution there right away that I think they didn't close for that matter, but they took a lot of step of caution for control. And that gave us some warning, like, God, I mean, things can come to us. And then I was in Toronto on Thursday the 12th, and I was planning to stay there over the weekend. And suddenly in New York City, I wanted to come back right away because I knew I wanted to make a decision. A week, not even a week, like 5 days before, we received a letter from the health department that one person was in our restaurants, and he was not positive. Couple of days later, he went to the Modern and was positive. So because he was in your restaurant last week, the week before and early, we wanted to let you know, and could you confirm that he was there and all that, so we had his name on the book, so we knew. And this was also an authority in New York managing the some city business in New York. So he was in the Post, all over the place. And I got scared because, you know, that weekend after he came, I had my kid in the restaurant. We were, you know, it was a normal day, but then it became such a scare that I felt like, you know, this is too difficult and maybe we should close right away. And as I was making the decision to close, Eric repaired the Bernardin. We spoke at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, I'm closing today also. And it kind of like, we were a couple of restaurants. I think Danny Meyer was closed also. And then after, within 4 days, everybody closed.
Wow. Well, I know that, you know, a lot of chefs across the United States, a lot of people are just like in this situation where they don't know like what to do. But I think to hear things like what you're doing, where you're evolving and you're adapting, and it's okay to maybe not know like exactly what's the right thing to do, but you try things and you evolve.
It's
and
important.
You know, but I think there's a lot that can be learned from that. So I'm going to let Rachel and Christopher talk and ask, I want them to ask some questions. It's such a great opportunity to have you on the line, and I want them to get some questions in. So
thank you, Richard. Thank you.
Yeah, Chef. One of the things that I've been talking with many people is that about Bocuse. We know that you're pretty close to the entire organization here in US and also in France, of course. You're one of like the iconic of the Bocuse. So what do you think that is gonna happen? We already saw that Bocuse, the organization, took pretty much all the countries that they were pre-selected from America, entire America, South America, North America, to the finals. That is going to be next year. Do you think that this is going to happen, or they're going to wait until probably a couple of weeks before, a month before, until like they really decide the competition, the finals are going to happen or not? And how is the U.S. team getting ready for it?
Well, we have had conversation with Lyon, telling them that, you know, our country and our industry and our community are shattered by what's happening, and that neither we have the time, neither we have the resources, because we want to put those resources to better use,
right?
Or at least different use, not to say better, but different use. And neither we have the focus to be able to go to Lyon in 2021. But we believe that maybe it's possible to still run a Bocuse d'Or. And I think they're looking at not maybe, they want to do maybe the event because they feel that maybe the conference will happen there next year. but in a different format. So our position is, you know, we at this point, we are not prepared. And I don't think we will be prepared to be there in January, as we stop everything from, you know, we were going to start to get into the training program by as the summer was coming in. But it's not the case anymore. And if we have opportunity to raise money with our sponsor, that will be maybe for a different cause right now. We have bigger cause. We have bigger, I think we have important things to discuss and to support and to have a vision for. And I think we have to try to put it aside for a short. Does not mean that we don't want to do Bocuse d'Or anymore. We just need a little bit of time to put our thought together and see where we are going right now.
I think it's great what you just said, that you're going to try to put all the resources and all your focus, the entire team, on something like that the industry really needs right now.
Yeah.
That is like to help them, like help each other. I mean, it's what everyone is looking for right now. I think that's great for everyone that is going to be listening to our podcast. And thank you for saying
very
that.
Much.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that, I mean, all of us, we love to go to Lyon and to be involved in every event and fundraiser that Bocuse does.
I know.
But
I
think that what you just said is just amazing and admirable.
And you know, there is no other world organization around chef so meaningful, powerful, and professional than the Bocuse d'Or. And you know, every chef going there, they are, you know, Richard was one of the chefs, and they are, to me, they are superstar in the kitchen, because there is so much work to do, to work as a personal challenge, but also as representing your country. And every chef who goes there are admirable, and really they have the talent, and they have the ambition, and they have the vision to be able to bring something from their country. But at this point, and you know, we also mentor BKB was managing Bocuse d'Or, but he's also managing a lot of, I mean, all the fundraising I did myself with the colleagues, and Richard participated in many fundraising as well. It was for the grant program. And I think our grant program will also certainly evolve to do different things with it as well. So, of course, Mentor has a big role to play in the future of the youth in our industry, and also the diversification of this. How can we bring opportunity better to many different sector, and also keep managing Bocuse d'Or, but that, you know, Bocuse d'Or is more with the sponsorship of brands, versus the grants is more with individual giving us support in order to give money back to young chefs.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people don't realize with the Mentor Foundation that it really isn't just Bocuse d'Or. I mean, over the last several years, a lot of times we would always get together, was helping with the Young Chef program and these grants. And it's kind of neat to see people that have gone through that that experience and see them, you know, going down the runway of their career, and how that was an important part in kind of accelerating that for them, you know, just by
very
being
much
involved.
And I think the responsibility of Mentor more and more will be about education, mentorship, and how we can help the youth become great chef one day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Before the show, Rachel and I were talking just about, like, with fine dining and how that has changed. Rachel, what were you asking about?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you had spoke on, you know, what you're doing currently to evolve through this, but what do you think fine dining will look like after this, post-pandemic? What do you see for fine dining, and how will it evolve?
Yes, to what direction it will evolve. You know, I think fine dining will always live. Will fine dining diversify itself? I mean, to me, I will consider my chef a fine dining chef, but I have all the different level of dining, from Café Boulu to Boulu Sud to Bar Boulu to DB Bistro to DB GB to Boulu Brasserie now and Epicerie Boulu and the catering at home. So I have this diversification. So I never felt and I was stuck with fine dining only. But at the same time, I have Restaurant Daniel, my flagship, and that's where I also build my name and my reputation, and certainly earn a lot of awards with that, with my team. I am looking at I'm looking at fine dining remaining something essential to people's life, but at the same time, fine dining has to be approachable. Fine dining has to be a little more casual. Fine dining has to be a little bit more soulful. Sometimes, you know, you go to a fine dining restaurant and it's less. It's lacking a little bit of an energy who you find in casual dining, or and sometimes it translates as pretentious because of that. Right. And so I think fine dining has to be sensitive to time also, but fine dining can really evolve with time. And we see all the great chefs in the country are very concerned about how to change and yet not lose what we live for, believe in, and want to bring to our customer. Price sometimes can be a sensitive thing. Rules in fine dining can be also a sensitive thing. But I think fine dining will survive. It will not be maybe as services as much. Let's say a restaurant might not be open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner anymore. It will only be open 5 nights a week or 4 nights. Or like in France, a lot of fine dining restaurants don't, you know, they just have enough service to provide for the best without right. having to cover all the shift. And I think that's one thing. The food menu might get smaller. Menu might get more focused on ingredients. I mean, I've always been focused on seasonality. So menu have been changing a lot. Tasting menu might get a little smaller for sure. But, you know, fine dining, I always felt was open to everyone. And I believe that this has to continue like this. I really enjoy when I had family or couple, for example, and they were just normal working people who came to celebrate their anniversary or their birthday or a moment in their life where they wanted to have their friends and themselves together, just have a good meal around the table, but not only a good meal, but fine service and fine setting and everything will make fine dining so special. And I believe that we have to continue to provide that in the most sensitive way.
Don't you also think, though, Chef, that the really all restaurants in general, I mean, and even businesses that post-COVID, like after all of this, I mean, it's going to really change a lot of things. I think people are going to really look at the efficiencies and safety of everything. Yes. I mean, I agree like with everything that you just said there about fine dining, but it does seem like this can have an impact on everything, the way you shop and even a casual restaurant. I mean, there's going to be some changes, I think, that'll probably
very
impact
much.
All of us.
Very much. And I think, and I hope that we can come back to a normal life one day. Where, you know, but I think this, not only the social distancing, but sort of the safety net we are building right now, and
right.
it's starting to ingrain in us, will, I think, live long for that. But at the same time, fine dining, like many other dining, you know, it's the same human connection, the same nurturing, the same pampering, than, you know, a casual restaurant. And I think we don't want to lose that. We don't want to lose the fact that this emotional connection between a customer and the food, the customer and a waiter, the customer and a busboy, the customer and a somebody, and the chef and all that. We don't want to lose that. And you know, as COVID is challenging us and this new rule of safety toward our customer, our staff, and all that is there, we still want to have fun and we still want to bring pleasure, you know. It's all about that. I mean, our stimulation is in giving pleasure. And if we take that away and we feel that we are robotizing our delivery, you know, like, I think it will make fine dining go away for sure.
How have you kind of like kept the team inspired, the people that you're working with through all this? I mean, are you guys doing Zoom calls, or is there any, well, what have you been doing to try to keep everybody inspired through all this?
I've done, I mean, I live on Zoom, but better now, because now there's kitchens up, and now we're going to have 3 kitchens up in New York.
That's great.
Out of 6. So it's good. We have done a session on Zoom. We have done a lot of also activation with our farmers, with our suppliers, with our customer, and where also our partners have been wonderful. I mean, amazing partners who we have created class, live class with them, and it has been and they have been very supportive. They gave money to Hand in Hand in order to give back to my staff. So I have been also in touch with the executive a lot and make sure that also all our executives stay in touch with our team individually as well. And there's some which we had closer affinity than others, so we made sure, but mostly a lot of the staff, we wanted to make sure that they were okay at all level. We had some staff who were challenged by family death in their family, and we wanted to make sure we support them, and also you know, people who had hardship, and so we had to stay very close to them all the time, and we do still. In the foundation I created, there's 2 people of the corporate office who manage it, but there's 3 members of the staff who is also the decision maker on where the money should go every week, for who and where based on the demand. And I think that has been very, very good. Everybody felt very good about all the decision made around that. And then, you know, of course, there would have been so much we could have done with everyone if we could have kept them on staff, because we could have wrote cookbooks. We could have done so much together as one. But because they were collecting unemployment, and we didn't want to, you know, disturb that, and ask, you know, and asking favor to someone who is asked to stay home is very difficult. You cannot do that. Either you rehire them or you leave them to be able to be covered properly. Right. And so, you know, it has been always, restaurant by restaurant, team kind of relationship.
Is there anything that, like, over this period that you found that you're kind of grateful for, or that, you know, I mean, because this has obviously changed your schedule too. I mean, is there anything that's like come out of this that's been positive? It's like, oh, you know what, I've been able to do more time, have more time to do this or more time to do that. I mean, because this has impacted everybody's personal life and work life, everything.
I think the biggest impact and I'm so thankful for the team members who came back with me to do all these meals we are producing in New York, and we keep producing, I don't know, at the rate of 5,000-6,000 a week at our commissary kitchen. And I think to me, you know, we have, I've been the co-president of City Meal on Wheels for the last 10 years. And I have been supporting City Meal on Wheels so many years, for three decades. And to have really stepped in and tried to really support the program in a bigger way, I think was very meaningful. You know, I think there's not a single chef, there's not a single restaurant, there's not a single restaurant family who has not been impacted. And we all learn to, you know, to sustain our team, to sustain our relationship with everyone, and especially also with our suppliers. We try to find ideas to activate things. But I mean, I've learned, and I'm learning more about takeout, and that's something we all learn about that. And I'm not the only one. I mean, I speak with Gavin, I speak with Grant in Chicago, and all that. And I mean, who in the world would have guessed that Alinea will do takeout like this?
Yeah,
and I think those are certainly the things we have learned. And you know, I have children, young children like you. And it has been also a learning curve to be able to live with them every day, and have nobody to help you besides my wife. It's not like we have always the grandmother and the aunt and the cousin and the nearby as well. So you know, all these challenges, we have learned to stay, you know, together. And I think now we have to learn to bring back people together again.
I do think that the social media, I mean, I know that people point to that as being like, it consumes your time and all the negative things people say about it. But to me, it's nice to be able to see what my peers are doing, what my friends and colleagues. I mean, I've watched you cook a couple of dishes. I was like, oh my God, that looks great. I'm going to make that next. I think you did duck one day, the chicken, the poached chicken.
You don't need to follow my recipe because usually when I cook at home, I have about 30 minutes. So, I did few classes where I took the time to record a little bit better things.
But, you know, I think that that's what I've always admired about you for so many years, is how approachable, and, you know, you're not trying to make it look like something it's not. It's like you're busy, you come home, you're trying to get some food on the table. And also, too, like the simplicity. I mean, I've learned that when I was going through Boku's store, mm-hmm. and you know that competition is very much about, like, you're trying to put all this work into
complexity.
All these different things.
Complexity.
It is, and sometimes... Yeah. Sometimes that can be in conflict with good taste, and sometimes just the trying to find that balance in the Boku's door is really hard to do. But I mean, simple food. I mean, some of the things that I watch you make, you know, just simple things. I mean, they look craveable and yummy, and you're like, man, I could really go for that tonight. That looks delicious. So.
But the thing is, then, you know, in a competition such as Boku's door that you did, you can't be spontaneous.
Right. Oh, yeah.
and I think for me, cooking at home is about being spontaneous. Oh, I don't have this, but I can put that. And, you know, I'm like making the recipe as I go along. I have an idea of what I want to cook, but I don't have totally an idea I'm going to finish the dish. Versus Boku's door, you need to know how you're going to finish that dish.
Well, you know, that whole experience, I can say for me, I mean, that was a lot of adversity to go through that. And I'm hopeful, as I kind of compare going through that adversity, that this one, which is so much more epic, this what we're going through today with the whole pandemic, that hopefully that something good comes out of this, that
Very
we
much.
All as a society and even just as individuals that we get better, because it's asking a lot of us. It's asking a lot of our companies and of our individuals and our team members. And, you know, I mean, I think that if there's a way to figure out to find the positive out
very
of
much.
All of this.
Very much. You know, and I think we are definitely, America is definitely in a turning point. I hope for hundreds of years, centuries to go, and we'll never have a situation we have been going through lately. And for us, I think we are all working very hard as a chef to try to really see, you know, what else can we do for our community? What else can we do to help having a better world here in America? And, you know, I don't think, chef, we were meant to be political in any way or lobbyist or anything, but we do have a responsibility because we are in such a constant contact with not only our staff, our community, but our customer and right. and all this sort of have to be able to live back and live well together. And really, we have to look at what else can we do to help people who are maybe who are in need of support. Or to me, it's, and you were an apprentice when you were young, and to me is to bring back apprenticeship in America. Right. and to really help young people of all color, but also right now craftsmanship and apprenticeship, it's essential for the future of the next generation and generation to come. And we have seen that with, we know that, you know, if tomorrow 1,000 young cooks can learn from a good chef, those kids will become great chefs themselves, versus sometimes be at school, not be motivated, or not have the chance to go to school, and not have a chance to have a good mentor, because, you know, it's a mentor is different than a school. And for me, kids 16 to 18, if we can put them on the right track and follow them after that and help them grow, I think we can do a lot.
Right. Well, I know the last question I have, and then I'm going to want Chris and Rachel to chime in if they have additional questions. I don't, it's not even really a question. It's just to kind of, just to echo pretty much what you just said, but really you kind of live that. I mean, I, as long as I've known you, as far as like with mentorship, you look at somebody like you, how busy you always have been in your career. And I've always admired how the one thing is you always are still very generous with your time. I mean, you have any time I ever needed anything, whenever I was training with Boku Store. And you know what?
Thank you.
The people around you, I think, are a testament to that. I mean, you look at Gavin and all the people the ripple effect of your knowledge and sharing that with people. And I think that if there's anything that other generations can take from this, is that to be generous with your time and try to nurture the people around you, because I mean, that's the most valuable thing that you can give anyone. So I want to thank you for being that role model. I mean, it's been inspiring to me, and I know it's been inspired to so many others.
I tell you, I have been cooking for 4 decades in New York City now, and I'm so proud of, even when I arrived in New York, they still chefs who are active. Or one of the chefs, for example, is a farmer on the Hudson Valley, Ray Bradley. And Ray was a line cook at the Polo Lounge with me in 1982. And he now does the farmer's market in Brooklyn and other farmer's markets. The other day I needed pigs. And he said, "Oh, no problem. I'm raising pigs. I'll get you pigs." But, you know, to have this, and this is one example out of thousands of young chefs all over the country who are still very active and we were together in a certain decades and did things together, and they sent me texts and messages and remind me, and they work with me here and there. And I think that web of connection, I know that if we want to put that power together and do something together, I think we can really do. And I think that's the beauty of our business, is the web we have and how we can make that stronger and more powerful.
I was talking to a couple of chefs that they're instructors in my country. I'm coming from South America, Chile, and they are trying to keep the young students motivated. What would you say to all of those people that you were mentioned, that some of them, they have to, like, they can't keep paying the university or the institute, whatever they're studying, and some of them, they're not going to be able to, and they're going to have to go back probably in a couple of years to try to keep learning about culinary. What would you suggest to them to do during this time?
Well, of course, I think it's very important to study, to keep studying about food, and to keep staying focused about food. I think I happen to be French. I love all the other cuisine, and I flirt with South American cuisine sometimes. I make an amazing moqueca where even the Brazilian kiss my hand and say, "Ooh, ooh, it's so good." My mother don't do it that good. Oh, I love Asian cuisine. I love Italian, but I'm French at core, and I keep studying about French cuisine. I keep being inspired by French cuisine. I love American cuisine. And I think for young kid is, you know, keep learning, but stay focused and keep moving forward stronger, better. And we have seen, for example, with bakers, for example, kids who learn to bake bread, they learn the art of baking, but the art of baking is pretty narrow in a way that, you know, once you master sourdough, you don't start to go and make all kind of bread. And I think for cooking, it's important to find a direction which you feel you have the biggest strengths and the best expression of yourself and your belief, and you can continue to teach from it also, because that's what's important. I think what makes a great chef is a chef who not only can cook well, but can mentor well.
Right. That's great to know, and for everyone that is listening.
So for every young kid, they have to figure it out what kind of mentor they want to be once they grow up.
It sounds great. It's great to just put them in that position. Like, you need to think from now where you want to be and how you want to mentor other people. So they're going to, the focus is going to be different whenever that time comes.
And how you want to impact also your world. Right. I'm involved. And to me, it's more the art of cooking than meaning that it don't matter if you're gonna make pizza or if you're gonna make a noodle store or if you're gonna do a fine dining, just be the best at it.
Right.
And keep learning about it.
Right. Chef, just one more question.
I want to say, and I went to a restaurant and they put cheese on my fish, and I said, "Oh my God, I've never seen that."
Yeah, they to be honest, they love to put cheese in, and usually they call it like Parmesan cheese or something like that. But it's they put in the seafood. But they put a lot of cheese too.
Yeah, and I cooked. Yeah, exactly. But it was not done by a new generation chef. It was done by, and I think they were from Europe, a restaurant from Europe, and it was kind of an old restaurant there. And not with a description of like Chilean food or anything, but anyway. I cook there. I cook in a winery there at Santa Rita.
Santa Rita, that's great.
Of Santiago.
Yeah.
I went to cook there because the owner was a good friend, customer, and on the way back from Brazil, he said, you know, would you stop in Chile? And I said, yeah, I want to see Chile. So I went to Santiago.
Oh, chef, one more question. What do you like the most over there, like as a product?
Where in Chile?
Yeah.
Seafood. I mean, you have the biggest coast in the world.
Right.
For seafood. And to me, it was that. And the wine are very impressive as well.
That's great.
I didn't have a chance to see much more than that.
That's great. Rachel, do you have a...
I do have one last question.
Yep.
Actually, let's make it two. We have seen a lot in 2020 this year. I mean, it's been quite a year for us. What has been the biggest lesson that you've learned?
I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that, you know, whatever we took for granted is all scratch, and we have to rebuild a new path. And I think what I've learned is to, I hope, never experience something like this, but that this experience will be useful and meaningful to the future generation, that, you know, they have to remember what the world went through, but I mean our industry and what we are facing with that. What I've learned is that we are very fragile and vulnerable as not only a business but as a structure and as a profession. And some businesses did very well during COVID. The restaurant business went flat, and I think the small businesses is the hardest part. And I hope that, you know, things will come back for everyone, but I hope that, you know, the one who lost their business of the energy, the talent, they do have it, I'm sure. It's just the energy and the need to be able to rebuild it fast.
Right. And last question, if you could recommend one book, what is your favorite book?
I think because it's the latest book, I think to take your mind away from where we are right now and, you know, where we're going, and you want to know a little bit more about French and French cuisine and what this French thing is about, it's Dirt, D-I-R-T, from Bill Bruford. Writer, he went 10 years ago to Lyon, and he wanted to become an apprentice in order to penetrate under the skin of French cuisine and not be just a writer about French cuisine who hasn't really spent time in France or really understood French cuisine from a French point of, from a chef point of view. And so Bill went as an apprentice to Lyon and spent 5 or 6 years in Lyon and had the chance to interview and spend time with many great French chefs, but also study the different structure of French cuisine and the historical part of French cuisine and the social connection with that ramification, and also about other personal adventure of himself in France. So I think it's a good book to read. It's an amazing writer. Is funny and sometimes a little harsh, but is definitely something to read. And of course, it's going to be translated in 48 languages, if not 75. So I think the whole world will read that book as well.
That's great.
Awesome. Chef. Thank you.
Chef, one last question. Which one is your favorite fast food?
Do you eat fast food ever?
I do.
I'm sure you have to have something.
Of course. Well, strangely enough, you might not know that fast food yet, but it's coming to you. About 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was approached by four kids from MIT. They were going to graduate that year. And one of their projects of graduation was to create a robotic kitchen. So they sent me a letter and say, you know, chef, one of them say, you know, I know you for being a great chef. I've been eating in your restaurant with my parents before as a kid. And I would like to show you what we have been working on. So I go to Boston. I go in their think tank. And they show me this machine made of plywood and plastic buckets and recuperation of things and adductions and bowls. And they made me a meal all automated by the machine. And it was a bowl. And I said, wow, this is fantastic. And they had the sauce on the side. And today they have one store in Boston. It's called Spice, S-P-Y-C-E. And they are opening second, third store in Boston. But from the original robot machine, now the other one is going to have about 60 different steps. The V2 wow. version is going to have 60 steps of making a meal with so many wow. different options, vegans and this protein. And there's going to be a special techniques to sear the meats and sear the protein and steam the vegetable or the starch and all that. It's and the bowl starts on one side, it come at the end, it has the cover, it's yours, boom. Best and very nutritious, very delicious, very ethnic, but at the same time you know, very much with the time and very affordable. And it's a robotic kitchen. We did it. Have you seen, Richard, have you seen the concept yet?
Yes, I have. And I encourage anybody that hasn't seen it to check out the website. I think, is it Spice?
It's Spice.com. Yeah, right.
Spice, yeah, well, with a Y.
The new store they will be opening will be even more, I think, impressive with the evolution of the work. And so... not only I'm an investor in this company, but I'm also their culinary advisor. And so I love that. I love also Sweet Green because I invest in Sweet Green as well. I love, you know, I like when young people come to me and say, do you want to put some money with my new business? Because we think
oh, you're going to get a bunch of Instagram direct messages after this.
not that I have a lot of money, but I like to pitch in for, you know, goodwill.
That's great.
And also for believing in it as well.
Well, Chef, thank you for spending some time with us today. I mean, as busy as you are, and you're so generous with your time. And I really believe that there's a lot of people out there that are really going to have a lot of takeaways just from hearing somebody of your caliber. And you're really kind of going through a lot of the same challenges like everybody else. I mean, it doesn't really matter how many restaurants you have. I mean, this has been difficult, but I think you've really given us some unique insight as to what you've been doing. And I feel like there's a lot of takeaways that we can all learn from. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. And that means a lot for me to spend time with you. And also, you know, I want to congratulate you for who you are. I'll never be a technician like you. I'll never be a wizard like you. We both are chefs, but they think who make me salivating, and I say, oh, maybe I should ask him the recipe because I don't know if I can pull it off myself. I mean, and when you do barbecue stuff, I need help. So I'm gonna ask you a few advice on that.
Well, I'll tell you, once all this stuff gets back to normal, we'll have to invite you down here to Northern Virginia, and we'll get a barbecue going together. Count on
it. Absolutely. I want to really know how to make your rib.
Count on it. All right, Chef, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone. Daniel.
Thank you, Chef. Thank you. All the best. Merci.